I've had my moments as well. One that particularly stands out to me was when I was about 30, and it was a time of deep discernment as I was either just on the cusp of starting seminary or it was in my first semester of seminary, and I was just on the cusp of making some serious life choices with Phil to be my life partner. And there was just a lot going on at that 30-year-old, that cusp of 30 when life offers us so much. And I knew that I was needed to shed things that no longer served me to begin to move into a new way of being. And Phil and I went to Ore Hot Springs in Ukiah, California, up in the Redwoods. It's one of my favorite places and a very sacred place for the two of us in our relationship. But on that particular day, I left or Hot Springs, and I took the road about a mile and a half over to Montgomery Grove State Reserve. And it's a state reserve with some of the oldest redwoods in the world and some of the tallest. So if you know redwood trees, they're just magnificently large and beautifully tall, and they create a canopy so that it's actually quite quiet in the grove, because there isn't that much space for other things to grow, no sun, and therefore aren't that many animals either scurrying around. So it's very peaceful and quiet. And to get to the grove, you need to walk up this hill, and then you're kind of at a level where you can see the trees above there, not at their leaf level, but you're kind of above the trees a little bit, and then you walk down and you're really at their roots. And there's this one big bowl in there, and I was walking through that area on this path, and then I began to hear it, or to hear them, and to hear the trees offering me what have become what I would call my marching orders for life. My marching orders are live freely, love boldly, tread softly. 6 words that have remained with me for 20 years. Live freely, love boldly, tread softly. From these trees, clearly from these trees, offering me the understanding that no matter where I went, if I kept grounded to that, all would be well. And that sense of all will be wellness has carried through me through these past years. It was a sense of communion with those trees in that place that I will never, ever forget. For me, mystical moments happen in places like that, but they also are not only earth-centered. They can happen in deep personal relationships. They happen in pastoral care relationships from time to time, when the soul truly arrives and we are bare and vulnerable together. A holy presence is there as well. A presence that takes me and the person I'm with often out of a sense of timeliness and into just a presence of the holy. And even for me, this can happen in large public actions. When people come together to bring about the beloved community, I have felt glimpses of that holy presence, that sense of this is what we were meant to do, that sense of timelessness to understand our profound interconnection with all of creation as we stand and march accordingly. According to that deep understanding. These kinds of experiences, which I would call mystical, open us up to a different sort of awareness. Separateness dissolves, and we understand our unity, our profound connectedness in a new way. Now, we're trained to believe in reality in a very particular way. But even brain science now can isolate those parts of the brain that experience life holistically, expansively, and those that experience it linearly or materially. Right? But who's to say that left side of the brain, the more linear side of the brain, is more connected to reality than our right brain, which is responsible for that huge opening up. We've been trained to believe that one side is the right side and the other side is some kind of fantasy. But who's to say that that's really the case? Every religious tradition points towards mysticism as another way of experiencing ultimate reality. Not only experiencing it, but really understanding it from a felt perspective. Chris mentioned the Sufi mystic. Where is Chris? The Sufi mystic Rumi. And within Christianity, there are hundreds of mystics, particularly around before the Middle Ages and the Dark Ages. Hildegard von Bingen said, "Humanity, take a good look at yourself. Inside, you've got heaven and earth and all of creation. You are a world. Everything is hidden in you." That profound sense of interconnection. And even our own Unitarian Universalism has roots that invite us into the mystical mindset. The very first source of our tradition is direct experience of the transcending mystery and wonder. Direct experience. And it comes from our transcendentalist ancestors and their insistence on the direct experience of God. When they were talking like that, it created a rift in our religious tradition. Ralph Waldo Emerson tells the incoming class of the Harvard Divinity School in 1838, "Cast behind you all conformity and acquaint people firsthand with deity." Let us be acquainted firsthand with deity, not through scripture, not through sacrament. They were throwing that all away to invite people into this kind of raw and real connecting experience. And Margaret Fuller, his contemporary and friend, talked about one of her mystical experiences like this. "I was in a state of celestial happiness, which lasted a great while." Isn't she lucky? "I was all radiant with faith and love and life. I began to be myself. Day and night were equally beautiful, and the lowest and the highest were equally holy. Before it seemed as if the divine only gleamed upon me, but then it poured into and through me like a tide of light." These are people from our tradition, our reasonable tradition, saying this. But sadly, it seems that we are within a time period of Western culture as a whole, and that our religious tradition mirrors where there's little space to share these experiences with one another. There's a silencing stigma around mysticism. One of my first courses in seminary was called Ministry and Identity. And we talked about minister as pastor and minister as prophet and minister as administrator and minister as mystic. And Yalbansi Charles Johnson, my dear professor, asked how many of us had these experiences. Most of us were first years and a little kind of skittish and nervous as I was, but slowly, most, if not all of us, raised our hands and got a chance to look around and see that we were not alone in having these experiences that we could not explain and could barely talk about because it's hard to put words on it. There is room for mysticism in our religious tradition. One of my colleagues, the Reverend Mark Bellatini, wrote a sermon entitled, "On Not Being Embarrassed Anymore," in which he talked about mysticism. And he talked about how he was moving away from Catholicism. And he said, "After a time, I noticed that the wonderful opening into spirit called mystical experience was still there, even after he moved from Catholicism. And it was perhaps an even more frequent occurrence. The maple leaves glittered with light that was more than reflected sunlight. The stars didn't simply hang there, they beckoned, they pulsed, They shouted, "We exist!" explosively, as if Van Gogh had knifed them into the sky. And then he said, "I read Dostoevsky's famous formula. If there is no God, then all things are permissible," and rocked with joy. Mysticism is available to atheists as well as theists. And there is beauty in the balance. There's beauty in the balance in recognizing that the beautiful pieces of Unitarian Universalism that invites us to be reasonable, to have reason as a noun, I'm going to rephrase this. Tom Owen Toll speaks about reason. He says, Unitarian Universalism is not a religion of reason, where reason is a noun, the substance. It is a reasonable religion, where free thinking prevails as an adjective or modifier. We use our reason to the fullest capacity to explore, but not capture life's inescapable mysteries. Because in addition to that, we know that there is something so mysterious that we cannot comprehend. Rationalism without mysticism grows sterile, he writes, and mysticism untempered by reason falls prey to credulity. Now, those of you who've come to have these experiences in your life probably only have them in glimpses. Marcia and Russ not only asked me to reflect upon these experiences of oneness, which I find to be hard enough, thank you very much, but they also asked me to, would you share ways we can feel that more often in our lives? The how. But these are unbidden. They're unbidden. There's no guaranteeing if or when you will have them. They are a gift. But I will say that you can cultivate a mystical mindset. And the very first thing to do is accept these mystical moments when they come. Accept them for what they are. Reality coming to you in another form. A gift to be savored. A balancing paradox of life. I invite you to be unapologetically mystical. Unapologetically mystical. And if you have these experiences, share them with one another, because the more we talk about them, the more they are likely to appear in our lives. And the more we dampen them, the more we shoo them away, the less we will experience them. And they are a gift. Truly a gift. Now, the other thing that you may have noticed in these stories is that often you need to be separated out, away from the busyness of your own life, in order for these to appear. Italy, Egypt, California, I've had them in Hawaii. I believe you can develop a mystical mindset at home as well. Dave Leonard had beautiful photographs that he took that you saw before the service and you'll see after the service. And in describing how he captures them, he wrote to me, "I used to do a lot more hiking when I was younger, but now speed is not on my mind. What were 2 to 3 hour hikes, what were 2 hour hikes a few years ago are now 3 hour hikes. And I am more richly rewarded by the natural world around me." So age and physical limitations can be an advantage here. Slow down. Our lives are so focused from thing to thing to thing that we miss so much of the other way to experience reality. So spiritual practices can help you slow down. For some, it's meditation, sitting on the pillow every day. But for me, it is engagement. But it is coming to engagement with a different kind of lens, with a lens like a camera with an open aperture, so that I can begin to experience the edges of reality as well as whatever it is my mind is fully focused on. Movement, walking, dance, and music can allow that opening to come as well. Unfortunately, there is no formula. I'm sorry if you're disappointed by having bought this sermon and I can't give you the formula, but there isn't one. But I would say that whatever gives you a greater sense of that openness, do that more. Do that more. Do it more not only because it offers that possibility for you to experience a huge gift that our body offers us, but also from that place of connection, compassion arises. And within the mystical mindset, compassion leads to action. Because once we feel that connection, we begin to understand our part in the place of things, to reveal that more and more. And our capacity to withstand the pain of disconnection, the pain of human indignities, the pain of the suffering of the world lessens. So this is a gift we are to savor, and a gift we are to use.